listening to a podcast of a program produced in 2014 as part of Aloud, a series of dynamic conversations, readings, and performances that take place in the Mark Taper Auditorium at the historic downtown Central Library in the heart of Los Angeles. These programs are presented by the Library Foundation of Los Angeles, which supports the Los Angeles Public Library. To support Aloud or learn about the entire podcast collection, please visit www.lfla.org/aloud. We're so excited to be presenting The Starlight on Idaho, and here's Daryl to tell you some more.
Thank you so much, Louise and Marin and Ken, for bringing us here. I know that my partner Cedaring in Word Theater has been wanting to be part of this for a long time, and it's so great to be here. I want to thank Dennis and Cindy for making it possible. This is what the piece is. Dennis has written an amazing, important trilogy of plays about a family called the Cassandra family. And it's all of us, but more messed up. And the youngest member of that family is in rehab for like the sixth time. And he's had a really tough couple of years. And he's writing letters to all the people who, as he says, he has a hook in his heart back to their heart. The girl he loved in fifth grade, his dad, his sister, Satan, people that he's struggling with. And my thing was that it's an epistolary tale as written, was that the addresser and the addressee read the letter together. So it makes it, as you'll see. And that's all I really have to say, right? And except thank you for coming, and here we go. Starlight on Idaho.
Dear Jennifer Johnston, well, to catch you up on things, the last 4 years have really kicked my ass. I try to get back to that point I was at in the fifth grade where you sent me a note with a heart on it, said, "Dear Mark, I really like you." And I turned that note over and wrote on the back of it, "Do you like me or love me?" And you made me a new note with 20 hearts on it and sent it back down the aisles, and it said, "I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you." I would count there to be about 15 or 16 hooks in my belly with lines heading off into the hands of people I haven't seen since a long time back, and that's one of them. But just to catch you up, in the last 5 years, I've been arrested about 8 times, shot twice, not twice on one occasion, but once on 2 different occasions, et cetera, and I think I got run over once, but I don't even remember it. I've loved a couple thousand women, but I think you're number one on the list. That's all, folks. Over and out, Cass.
In fifth grade, you used to call me Mark. Full name, Mark Cassandra.
P.S. Where, you might ask, am I?
Funny that you asked. After all those adventures, I am at an undisclosed location right back here once again in Ukiah, the armpit of Northern California. Cass.
Dear old buddy and beloved sponsor, Bob. Now, hear the latest from the Starlight Addiction Recovery Center on Idaho Avenue, in its glory days better known as the Starlight Motel. I believe you might have holed up here once or twice. Yes, I believe you might have laid up drunk in room 8, this very one I'm sitting in at this desk writing this letter. which is one of the few I'll actually be mailing because I need a few things, which are in that box in your closet. Anyway, I hope they're still there. I think there's a pair of jeans, and I think there are a few pair of socks. And in fact, you would just bring the whole box. If you did that, you would increase my holdings between 600% and 700%. I'm down to one of everything except for two of these socks, which are both white, but they're not the same brand. My good old boots collapsed, but I have been given an excellent pair of secondhand running shoes here, but I am writing to tell you this.
That I am not running anywhere. I am standing my ground. I intend to do the deal, and here's why. Because the last 4 years have positively kicked my ass. In the last 4 years, I have been shot, jailed, declared insane, etc. And even though I'm just 32 years old, I am the only person I've ever met who's actually ever been in a coma. I have repeatedly been told by medical people who probably know what they're talking about.
You are lucky to be alive. And nobody around here has any idea why you aren't dead.
Wow, I think I just took a nap. They've got us on antabuse here, and sometimes, bloop, you just fade out, dream. In a few days, that's supposed to pass.
Now, they won't let me call you, but I'm pretty sure they'd let you come to family group, which is on Sunday, 2 to 4. Before I mail this, I will check if it's okay for you to come. I'd sure like it if you did. I wouldn't mind seeing a friendly face in the circle there.
I'm not the type to trudge along. I'm the type to come shooting off the block, get 20 yards ahead of everybody else, and go stumbling and sprawling off into the sidelines with a collapsed lung. And pretty soon, I hear the others. Here they come. I hear them trudging steadily along on their road to happy destiny.
I've got to have somebody reminding me to stay in my lane and take it easy. And that's where my buddy Bob Seale comes in. He's my sponsor in the AA. But the thing about your sponsor is you've got to call him. I don't like to call him. He's always got something wise and reasonable to say.
So, if he turned up with my box of stuff and 2 cents of input for the family group discussion, what a relief. Cass.
Dear old dad and dear grandma, I'm sitting here in this room at this desk at the Starlight Addiction Recovery Center writing letters to everybody I know. I got about a dozen hooks in my heart. I'm following the lines back to where they go. I hope somebody up there knows I'm sincere about this. I could certainly use a little help. But I might as well announce right here that I'm not about to get on my knees because I've never been that way. And if your pal Jesus is waiting around for somebody like me to do something like that before he comes down off the cross, I'd say he can quit waiting. Damn this place and everybody in it. I mean, I've just about had it with rehabilitation. The thing is, group therapy has just made the kinks in my mind all that tighter. It's basically a circle of terrified bullshitters kissing this guy's ass named Jerry. If you're late to a session, they lock you out. Late to a second session, you're expelled back on the street. I mean, let's all just step one step back and take a look at the fact that I was never in the army because I cannot stand exactly that kind of discipline. Oh, yeah, I am just pissed off, and that's about it. I have to spend 2 hours every single night in this room at this desk considering these hooks in my heart and writing down my life history, which we each go up at the 2-week point and read to them, read to all the others, sit there in a chair. Read your history of the downfall of your pitiful self to a circle of ghosts. I may or may not get around to doing it. Right now, I'm just filling a notebook with jazz, waiting for my handwriting to improve itself. Like I say, though...
I am sincere. I am sincere. Here's some pretty good evidence. This is my third time in rehab, but my first time to make it past 4 days. I've got my legs locked, and I am staying on this one for the entire ride. And those who think otherwise are entitled to their mistaken opinions, fuck them all. I hope they put down money against me, because if so, then somebody's walking home broke. Excuse the swearing, Grandma. Well, Grandma, that was entertaining, what you pulled in family group last Sunday, but ridiculous. Come on back sometime, but keep a lid on it, okay? I'm through being the one to explain this family to each other. Grandma, I know how in your eyes it's like every one of us is the runt from a litter of geniuses. We just need extra feeding and we'll sprout. But the total number of times it adds up to that the jail is clanged on us is pretty impressive, Grandma. And those are the statistics. They speak for themselves. Whatever these people in this rehab are doing to help me, I think we should pause and consider it. I'm shocked to hear myself say that. But the last 4 years, my habits have drugged me behind them over pretty rough ground, and now I'm teachable. So let's set our ideas aside and just listen. I thought you were listening at the family day group session on Sunday, but I'm sorry, it turned out you were more like laying in wait to pounce like a slobbering cougar on poor Jerry, who I happen to despise. But he's the one clean and sober 3 years, while meanwhile I'm the one drunk not a week ago. I've just got nothing left to say. I get around a mirror and it isn't pretty. I mean to say, you can't just wipe at my snot and hand me a snow cone. I don't need grandmotherly help. I need trained and certified counselors to point a few things out. And I can't have my grandma at family group red-dogging the whole discussion and preaching about Jesus Christ and Satan. Or anyway, the last 30 minutes of a two-hour group. That's how much time you took up jiving on heaven and hell. Thanks a million. Luckily, Jerry has a sense of humor. Thank you for representing the Cassandra family in a most standout way. I am not surrounded by demons here. These are trained and certified counselors.
I'm through explaining the family to each other. It's gee-damn ridiculous is what it is.
I guess I can swear here as you won't be receiving this, as I won't be sending it. Do you remember when the Starlight was a motel? I remember when it was a motel. And whores used to sit out on the bench at the bus stop across the street, really miserable gals with blotchy skin and dents in their head who'd been run out of San Francisco. You have to be pretty down on your luck to get knocked off the market in the Tenderloin. I mean, you wouldn't cross the street for them. But I guess once in a while, some desperate character from one of these rooms in the Starlight would make the journey. Do you know what? I've had 1 or 2 minutes here when I might have done it myself. But no more whores. The bus stop benches are empty. As far as I know, the benches aren't even there anymore. I don't think the bus runs past here no more. I mean, this is not a family to get their coat of arms tattooed on your chest. Do you remember when broke his girlfriend's nose in the living room and said, "There, arrest my case." Do you remember when Dad scooped his hand down in his soggy cereal and just sat there staring at nothing for about 22 minutes with a glop of it in his hand? Do you remember when John got his picture in the papers in Dallas being arrested, and then he sent it to us in the mail like it was really something to write home about? You know what I remember most about that picture? The borders. were all ragged because he had to tear it out of the page with his fingers. My oldest brother is somebody who the state of Texas won't let him possess scissors. That's your litter of geniuses. Jailhouse geniuses in orange jailhouse overalls, rammed full of sin and picking up trash by the road. Stuffing trash in white sacks along the interstate.
Incidentally, if this rehab program works, and if I get it together, if I reach a point of balance, I will enroll in college. That's not what I started out to say, but if I can get so I can look people in the eye, get so I can make change and carry on conversations, I will get a part-time job and enroll in college. But as for my grandma, as for last family group day, dear Pope John Paul, do you have two first names or is Paul your last name, like your Mr. Paul? And I know it's not just dumb luck. I know I ordered the circumstances. At first, I was interested in getting high. I liked the feeling. I liked to laugh at nothing and get my feet crossed and go down on my ass. Then later, it wasn't fun. It was torture, but it was a button I could push to destroy the known world. I mean, it's like I get that glass as far as just touching against my lower lip, and next thing I know, I'm on a ghost bus to Vegas. There's a certain power in that, you know? It's like, if you don't like the movie you're in, you just grab this jug going by and it takes you and flings you into a completely different story. What do they feed you when you're the Pope? Try the stuff around here sometime. For lunch, they give you a marshmallow and a coffee bean. It's a salvage yard for people who totaled their souls called the Starlight Recovery Center in Ukiah, California on Idaho Avenue. What's wrong with me? I won't be sending no letter to the Pope. But I'm telling you, I think I've been dealing with the devil, and I could use some expert coaching. There really is a devil. He really does talk to me, and I think it might be coming from some antabuse giving me side effects, but be that as it may, I need to know the rules. So far, I think I found out that I don't have to obey his orders. I can just ignore him, sort of. But if I keep pissing him off, is he going to get after my people? Mark Cassandra.
Dear Satan. Senior Mr. Business. You are one big fucking bubble. And I'd hate to be there when you go pop. Because then I'd get a lot of really rank stuff on me.
I mean, I'm here to change or die trying, but all I can think about is,
if this was still the old Starlight, the motel of bad dreams, I'd scrape together a couple of $100 and lay up here drunk until they smelled my corpse and broke the lock.
But everything changes, and the Starlight's all new and different, and I'd better get different, too, and find a different way of filling up than alcohol. I like the thing this guy Wendell was saying in group. He put out the idea of pouring in the right thoughts into our poison thinking, like pouring good water into a glass of dirty water until I'm filling up and spilling over and just keep going like that till I'm running clean. My grandma puts it,
Cass, that, if you keep drinking, your babies will come out cross-eyed, and you'll end up buried in a strange town, and your name's spelled the wrong way.
Dear sis.
Here I am. Yep. Again. Same old story. But this time, I swear it's feeling different. You're the one person I've never jived, so that's as far as I'll go with that one.
It's feeling different. That's as much as I'll swear to. If you want to come to family group, you can. I have had one family group, but nobody came but dear old grandma, and that led to an incident. I realize you're stuck in Dallas, but if you come home for a vacation, I wouldn't mind seeing a friendly face. And if it was my sister Marigold, I'd be smiling. Marigold. Sister Marigold. My noble young Petunia. It's every Sunday, 2 p.m.
You'll do better than Grandma, I'd lay odds. She didn't have a word to say, not until about 3:15. Family group goes for 2 hours. The wives, husbands, children, any close people, they all come for group therapy, mostly sitting with rods up their butts and every face pulled tight. Nobody knows if they're about to get ratted out, get their covers pulled. Playing it close, in other words, as far as their twisted little games they play with their loved ones. Jerry asking, what would you say to your loved one? And they say, oh, I don't know, I pass. Like that. But this one guy, Kevin, who's been in these places plenty, he looks at his wife when it's their turn and just comes out with it. He looked at her.
I love you. He was looking straight at her. And he was sniffling, crying.
She looked at him and went, I. She looked at him like he was trying to get her to jump from a high-rise fire to save herself, but she just couldn't quite say something real.
I don't care about these people. I don't give a damn about anything. Except that I love you.
I love you too, she said. Baby, I love you too.
And while we all watched, and I mean Grandma too, this couple were embracing and crying for about 5 minutes. I don't know how much long-run good it does to be doing that, but I tell you this, it certainly livens up the family day when you see that kind of thing happening. Just keeps the whole thing fascinating. So, I was going to tell you about Grandma. So Jerry there, they call him the counselor or facilitator, Jerry. At the start of the session, he comes out with a pretty harmless lecture about how the booze isn't anybody's fault. It might be in the genes, in the blood, inherited. Grandma's sitting there like Sunday school with her hands in her lap for, I'd say, 1.5 hours. Never a peep until I notice she's cutting her eyes at Jerry. I mean, they're down to burning slits, man. And right in the middle of somebody else's stuff, she just lays into him with something to the effect of,
Jerry, if that's your real name, I think that you would climb a tree and tell a lie before you'd stand on the ground and tell the natural truth.
Jerry's going, wah, 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 and she just draws up another lungful of this good old California air, which she always claims is poison, and says,
do you mean to say that you're going to pin all this on me, his grandmother, and on my ancestors, when we are good Nat and Holla mountain people who never should have left Carolina, and my husband wrote speeches for the mayor of Odessa, Texas? And our blood's as good as yours. And you say it's passing down alcoholic generations like the sins of our fathers? Yeah. You got to stand on your own 2 feet, Cass, and not blame your relatives for your own miserable mistakes.
With her face 3 inches from Jerry's. He looked like he was ready to go out and hang himself. I enjoyed that. But needless to say, the subject of Jesus came up in this discussion right about 13 seconds into it.
The Alcoholics Anonymous is an arm of Satan. You might as well get that through your head and shut your trap and so on.
Like I say, they hold family group at Sundays at 2 p.m., 2 to 4 p.m., and I'm required to be in attendance, like I say, and if I don't have any family at family group, what's the point? I'm sort of pointlessly there.
So you're invited. I mean, if they ever let you out of Dallas. Over and out.
Over and out. They give us antabuse in here and it makes you sleepy.
Over and out.
Dear bro, I got too near the edge of the ride and flew off.
I am done, man. Yep, get out your fork.
You know, it'll be my 33rd birthday next October, but in just the last couple years, I've had at least three of those experiences where afterwards you wake up and remember nothing, and some medical expert is attaching back on various parts of you and saying, son, you are lucky to be alive.
Sitting on my bed, hugging my own self, trapped in the arms of a moron. Look, I know the one place I can't be hunting for solutions is in the mirror, but did you ever think that maybe there actually is a devil? And he actually does get his claws in certain people, and they actually do get dragged through the garbage of an evil life on their way to actually going to hell?
Here's the thing, Luke. Last year, I told you how I went to Texas, Houston, Dallas, Odessa, all of that. But I didn't tell you that since then, since the last time I saw you, and you behaved like an atomic shit bomb in the harmless home of our dear old dad and grandma, since that night when you broke your girlfriend's nose in the living room in front of the whole family and calmly said, there, I rest my case. I went to the good old prison in good old Gatesville to see good old mom.
Yep, I went to see our mother. She shrank to a dot right while I was looking at her. She said,
I take a nap, and at some point I wake up because I hear a dog whimpering. I wake up, and the dog was inside me, a puppy. It's crying to break its little heart inside me.
She said,
your father, he rose a little bit above my origins, but I sank you right back down to my level.
Fujiyama Mama, that was her song, remember?
Yeah, I'm a Fujiyama Mama, and I'm just about to blow my top. And when I start erupting, I don't know where it's gonna stop. Yeah, I'm building out
the Is that a real song, or did she just make that up?
Hiroshima too.
Oh, this is so fucked. So fucked. I'm full up from my anus to my eyeballs. Excuse me, I have to burn this page and write a letter to God while it's on fire. Question is, God, where are you? What the fuck on earth do you think you're doing, man? We are in hell down here. Hell down here. Hell, you know? Where's Superman? When Grandma showed up here for a demented visit, she took me aside and says,
you are surrounded by demons. But don't you worry, Cass. God has got his hand on your gut, and he's pulling you out of hell.
Well, this is the longest ride out of hell I ever heard about. And if I'm out of hell, whose meat is that I smell frying? God has put his feet up and screwed the head off a bud and has drifted off into a nap while I sit here burning and stinking on the barbecue.
Dear Melanie, you know, I'm glad I met you and heard the story from you in group about your daughter dying and your purse. It would have made me even sicker if it was just a story about some person I could only think about, like somebody I could only imagine. But it isn't as hard since I got to really meet you. and hear about it in person. Because you have a sweet, sincere quality. You're bouncy, smiley, young for 61 years, and no matter how hard you've been knocked around. I saw you in a light. Beautiful.
These last 4 years have chewed several giant holes right through me. I thought I was finished before, but that was minimum damage compared to this.
Your fellow inmate, Mark Cassandra.
Dear Satan, I did not enjoy it at your jamboree last night.
Dear doctor, I'm going to roll a cigarette, and I'd like to light it and get through the entire thing in a state of sanity. I did see the devil one time.
Dear doc, to continue, this woman in group, Melanie, she's old enough to be an old lady, but she's not. She's sweet, soft, very easy in her soul, it seems like. She starts off talking pretty matter-of-fact. Then it's getting to be a regular thing. Somebody who starts out like that suddenly breaks down full of tragedy. She, Melanie, lost her daughter and two grandkids in a fire last year. My daughter was a good Christian girl. Two fine, good, beautiful kids. She raised them right. Raised them Christian. Lost them in an apartment fire. Now, here's one for you, doctor. While she, Melanie, slept in the waiting room at the burn unit and her daughter died, somebody snuck out their hand and stole her purse, took the money, and threw the purse in the trash can. She found it in the trash can later after they told her that her daughter and two grandkids were dead.
In group the other night, a guy just like me said, I woke up in Vegas, sticky, broke, and confused. It's a perfect description of that place. I've never gone there, just woke up there. That guy was funny. Reminded me of Gary Cooper, real cowpoke down on his luck in the smelly cities that ate the prairie. How long was he around, 2 days? I heard he went to the Aces Motel 2 blocks east of here at the corner of 4th. And he's shacking up with some Mexican kid, not a girl, a boy. I mean, that's the trouble inside him. He's got two acts going at once. He's a rope-em, ride-em cowboy, and he's a happy little sodomizer, and it's shorting him out. That's what we got to do, is get down to just one story. The true person we are, and live it all the way out.
I'm getting depressed. Depressed. I think this anabuse is going wrong on me. You said we'd feel run down or sleepy 2 or 3 days to start with, but you forgot to say prepare to fall down through a trapdoor in the bottom of your soul. I mean, when I lie on my bed in this room by myself, I get dragged down to a black place. Well, I've heard people talking right outside my window who aren't there when I go look. Around other folks, I mean, real folks, folks who are really there, I feel absolutely fine. They talk, I talk, everything appears as normal. Get in this room and shut the door behind me, and I'm alone with somebody who's not there. It's a feeling I don't like, as if somebody's lurking.
Dear friends and neighbors in the universe, dear Rolling Stone and TV Guide, I think I need to tell you I am totally out of cools. Some kind person has donated a whole can of Bugler that we can roll out of, but I tell you what, Bugler smoke burns like fire from your lips on down to the pit of your lungs. So if you brought me a couple packs of my brand, you know what I mean? Cools. I have written thousands upon thousands of these letters, and the reason I don't run out of ink, I think I'm actually writing too many of them down. Or any of them. I think I'm just wandering, hiking, marching all around this room like it's a small, tiny mental institution, hallucinating, writing letters on imaginary paper. Don't tell me to tell them about it. Didn't you hear me telling them about it? Shut up. I already told them. Hey, about this ant abuse. I think I'm Christ. I hear the devil. And so, get back in your room. Stupidest thing I ever heard. That is so Eddie. That is so Eddie, man. They are the Eddiest, most ridiculous people that if you pull this letter up to your ear, you can hear me laughing at them like a coyote. They are a bunch of Eddies and so ridiculous. Flat faces and flat minds. Or as they say down over and along through Texas, fuck all y'all. These last 4 years, sometimes I wonder if I didn't die. And I'm really dead. And this is purgatory, heaven, or hell. And it's up to me which one. One thing is, you don't get me to do things. I don't listen. Might as well shut up. I'm not a slave. Where I just was the road of hell. Black, boiling dirt and burning diesel smoke. Nothing burns hot as diesel. People by the side run over, squashed, killed, and dead. Devil laughing so close I saw the veins in his teeth. You don't get me. My ticket says, to Texas. He rolled the stone aside, and in the cave, the mysteries flitted like bats and insects. Here are the answers to everything, said the devil, like UFOs and life beyond the grave. Like, what was Elvis thinking? What was Elvis thinking and feeling in those last dark days? Like, just who masterminded JFK? And the cave was his mouth, like a bathroom full of stink, and his tongue popped with cheap sweat. Yeah, boy, he dragged me down to his jamboree. Drag me down through the toilet formerly known as my life. Down through this nest of talking spiders known as my head. Down through the bottom of my grave with my name spelled wrong on the stone. Standing on his stump shouting jive. Just get a whiff of sulfur and wet fear. Come breathe these rank aromas for the purposes, of course, of scientific inquiry alone. The mayor is inside already. Come, it's all respectable. Satan says the gamblers shake the dice and shake eye the gamblers. Snake eyes in paradise. Satan shouts, you know who Judas was? He worked for me. I run the jamboree. And Hollywood and Vegas and start all the wars. Vampire breather of the baby's breath. I, the worker of the strings to jerk the fools dancing at my hellhole hoedown jamboree. Glue huffers, jelly rollers, paint suckers, bikers, truckers, cowboys, teachers, preachers. About a million hipsters hooked on dope. Shaky alkies with their nerves burned up. Hey God, where is you? You ain't nowhere. We search for some faint signal from your power. All that just now, right now, while I'm writing it down. Not your boy, Cass.
Dr. So-and-so? I forgot your name. Listen to me. I can't get this across to anybody in this ridiculous, pathetic excuse for a rehab, but I have to tell you, I think this ant abuse you gave us is backfiring with some serious, serious side effects. I lie on that bed over there, and my mood goes black, and then I can feel my mind, my actual mind, pulling itself in two. I hear the devil laughing, and I hear him ordering me to kill people. Oh, don't worry. He's been running on me all my life, but you can't tell me straight out what to do. There's no way I would ever take a direct order from anybody. That's why I never went into the military. But if you read the papers, you see, every day where somebody just jumps up and chops the baby's head off. And I have to tell you, there's been some of that in my very own family. My mother, when I was 4 years old, went psycho herself. And she's been in prison for 28 years in Gatesville, Texas. And prison has not in any way reformed her. She should have gotten out by now. But she won't behave, and they just keep adding on.
Last week here in number 8... I had a train jumper wino roommate with slashed up shoes, and a tattoo on his arm said, "Eat, fuck, kill." That was his complete statement. Never said hello, never said goodbye. Never took off his shoes. Here 2 days, then up and gone. He was all hate. I've got to get sober or I'll get that way where every breath you breathe just stinks and it only takes 1 minute in a new town before you're mad enough to leave. Hang out one solitary day and then you're off again on a freight car waving your middle finger in the air. When the devil gets that last hook in your heart and then he starts yanking you town to town. My grandma tells the truth about the devil. Well, all right, when she says the devil's pulling on you, it sounds like somebody's grandma babbling, but when it's happening to you, it's snakes crawling into every orifice, and you can't move to stop them getting in.
My sponsor, Bob Cornfield, dropped around finally with a box of my stuff. Not much. Small box, and the contents inside still rattled. He gets a cigarette going, standing there in this room. Room 8. Looking around like he invented the place. Well, these AA guys are faking it about 80% of the time. But let's just hang on to the truth. They're clean and sober. And I'm the one woke up moaning with his head in the toilet not 2 weeks back. I think to see me here made him sad. But he won't show pity. Not allowed. I told him I feel like I might be Jesus Christ, and the devil is sending me messages. And he said, "You can't be the second coming, because I am." I think it was a joke, but I've lost my talent for humor. It scared me when he said it. Everything they say sounds very deep. Their voices sound like they're echoing out of eternity.
Let's just face the music. And the facts. Somebody's going out of my mind.
Your patient at the Starlight, Mark Cassandra.
Just call me Cass. To doctor in charge of ant abuse complaints. Meanwhile, all these people in group, I hate them. Maybe... Oh, well, some of them aren't so bad. I don't know which ones, though. Okay, I like so-and-so. First several days I was here, she was like a robot in group. Carolina, that's her name. Changed her shirt and pants, but never varied her stuff otherwise. This was Linda's group, afternoon group. Each time Linda says, "How do you feel, Carolina? What's your story, Carolina?" And every time she gives back the same speech. You can make it into a song. Same thing, over and over, the first 5 days. She's not bad looking, about 40 or 45, kind of chubby, but in a sexy way. Made herself up just right, like a doll, every morning. Like this is the Riviera rehab, man. And she wore these middle-aged type, big enough shorts, but these white little girl patent leather shoes, singing her song.
"My husband left me 15 years ago for a woman from the firm he worked for. Just left me flat. And every morning for the last 15 years, I wake up and think about those two, and I get sick, way, way down inside my stomach. Every morning for 15 years. Most mornings, to tell you the truth, I have to vomit about it."
Woman in charge, Linda, says, "You mean you feel angry?"
"No. I'm not angry. I'm just a little disgusted at the behavior."
Every day, Linda says, "You mean you feel angry?"
"But I'm not angry, Linda, and I don't believe you've heard me, for you keep on asking that same question."
Finally, she says,
"Linda, I am not angry, Linda, you fucking cunt-faced bitch whore! God damn it, you never listen, you shit!"
And so on. Screaming to bring back Elvis while ripping out of the room, down the hall and clear across the courtyard, screaming like an F-16. She's gone, and we're all sitting there in that room. Shocked, deaf and dumb and blind, like it was lined with foam rubber. It was that silent, I'm telling you. I mean, we were as shocked as if she'd just blown herself to bits before our eyes. Well, we all assumed that she'd never be back. She'd keep marching through those gates and out to the first bus to come along, or stick her thumb out, one of those, and be gone, gone, gone. Like my roommate, eat, fuck, kill. But the very next morning, here's Carolina, sitting in her usual chair, acting oblivious. And I have to say, her eyes were so much light, like somebody's put two suction cups on the sockets and sucked out all the dark and sadness. She looked like a normal human.
Now to get to the truth. Hey, everybody. I was a whore in Denver before I got married at Madame Lafayette's for almost 6 years. 5 years and 7 months, till technology and the mob ruined the business with credit cards and massage parlors. And then I got married. And now I'm divorced. And I don't know what else to say. Yeah, I didn't want to face how I felt about my husband and that bitch of his. I feel a lot better now that I know I hate those two for running off and sticking me with the tab for the rent and the phone and the whole middle class life. I think they live in Mexico. I hope they get a few diseases that make them miserable.
Big smile. Having fun. Ready to cut the cake. You just figure she's going to do the deal and make the program, and she's turned all around. I mean, that's how it is. Group therapy isn't some gigantic mystery. We alkies are just a tangle of lies, like the insides of a golf ball. You start cutting into one little rubber band in that mess, like, how do you really feel about your husband shafting you? And the whole ball starts unraveling and whizzing around the room. Now, look. I know we're here to get honest. And I feel I've been doing it the last few months, even before I landed here again, but I still don't see Mr. AA breakthrough in the mirror. I see something lurking over my shoulder. You know who it is. Devil been talking to me. Telling me to kill everyone in here. Laughing. But I hear these things clearly, but still I feel sane. Sane. Do you get me? I am sane. Over and out. Like, I know I shouldn't be hearing these things, so what is the cause? Am I torching out on antabuse? Why do I think I might be Jesus Christ, and I'm supposed to come here and suffer, really suffer, suffer past your most excruciating fantasies of torment, and why do I think everybody's looking at me because they know this about me? Why does the radio seem to know what I'm thinking and pick up the conversation right in the middle of my thoughts when I pass the window in Jerry's office and he's listening to the news? I say, I am not killing anybody, Satan. And the radio says, the president's order has been disobeyed. If I am Jesus and I'm going to hell, then I want you to say so. You're the one I'm asking, Dr. What's your name? And if I'm not, then I want you to get me off these pills because they're obviously running me the wrong way. They're supposed to make me shy of alcohol, not completely unable to think. I don't feel like Mr. AA Breakthrough. I don't feel like, hey, now give me a great big hug as we trudge that road to happy destiny they talk about at the meetings. But I do feel kind of pleasant contemplating that woman, Carolina. I feel like my mind is quiet, at least for a couple seconds, at least for the last few puffs of this roll'em. I'd like to get through a whole cigarette without thinking crazy. And I don't remember my previous goals, but the goal right now is to get through this cigarette, man, without starting up Satan's Jamboree. Still me, still in here. Still your patient, so what's the problem? Mark Cassandra, room 8.
Dear Dr. Kusa, thanks for taking me off the antabuse. Every hour I feel more down to the ground. I don't know why I didn't have the balls to just stop taking it without your say-so. It's like I know I don't know what's good for me. the last 4 years. Wow. Thanks for taking me off the stuff. The world has been saved.
Dear Satan, you think I didn't recognize you that time?
I was outside of Harold's Tavern downtown about 3-4 minutes ago. Come out onto the street right after happy hour, exactly at the moment the sun descended. There he is. Guy leaning up against the wall in an alley with his knee bent back, sole of his foot against the wall like we used to do. We kids who thought we were so tough. What do you want? I said.
Well, all of you is yours, is mine already. So what difference does it make what I want?
I said, are you a messenger of God?
Worse, he said.
I asked him, what could be worse than a messenger of God?
Basically, the problem was I knew I had done things I would have to pay for. I felt I had done things I would have to pay for.
Then I went inside the Monster Hotel, and the desk clerk was complaining to some people. He showed us the money that guy had just paid with. He'd pasted the corner of a 20 onto a $1 bill.
And Satan, that was you.
I mean, that's who Satan is. You're a phony. Can't even come up with 20 bucks for a box and a bunk at the Savoy.
Dear Satan. Yeah, they took me off the antabuse. The antabuse was your last thing. Well, it didn't work. Everybody thinks you're just this amazingly cool cat in a striped suit and a ragtop caddy sucking on a cell phone. Licking fire from your fingers, plotting the downfall, pulling on the strings.
But you got no strings. Not one of these strings from my heart hooks leads off into your evil hands. These hooks leading out from my heart to the hearts of people who you don't deserve to hear the mention of their names. So leading out from my heart to the hearts of people I love. So get out of my caddy, Daddy. I'm neither one of us driving this thing. Who's driving it is, and I feel like a genuine pussy saying it, but a power greater than myself. Mark Cassandra, a more or less Christian.
Dear Brother John. John, I'm gonna come and see you. Are you in a regular prison yet? Or do they have you drooling on a ward somewhere?
Dear John, the strangest of all us Cassandras. And oh, say there, incidentally, I do mean it. You're the strangest of all us Cassandras. More strange than Dad. More strange even than Mom in prison. More strange than me, too, don't matter how many times they shoot me. More strange than Bro, but just by a hair.
Well, I'm writing letters to everybody I can think of. You and Bro are getting a little ink here. May the cops never catch him, and now that you're caught, may they treat you gently and release you in the near future. I'm writing letters to each one of you lucky winners who has a hook in my heart and a string leading into yours. Every time your heart beats, I can feel a little jerk, just a little something.
And whether you like it or not, that's love. Love for the idiot grandma. Love for the medicated father. Love for the brother on the run and for the brother and the mother in prison in Gatesville and Huntsville. May the visions of your heart be blessed. That's what I heard a preacher say on TV the other day. May the blessings of the sun and the rain find us out. Love for the sister who should divorce us all. Love for Sister Marigold who should divorce us once and for all. Not sitting down, not writing with paper and pen, just pacing back and forth like a wolf in a zoo, just writing with the fire in my mind. Spent a while there thinking, convinced, believing that with the proper induction of chemicals, I can be a cross between James Bond and Jesus Christ.
I believe you and Marigold were the two of us not to get mixed up seriously with substances. She's turned out so golden. Then you, on the other hand. Well, it's not like the induction of chemicals is required. A few bad days on Planet E can warp you just fine. And Mom. Whew! Well, she sucked in enough stuff to count for the whole family's warpage and plenty more. I was tiny, but I remember. She used to sit there in her blue recliner, snorting glue or sucking sterno through a sponge or woofing spray paint through a sock. And failing to understand the television. And praying to strange hallucinations and getting results. That's about all I remember. To me, she wasn't so much of a mother, really, John. More of a sort of a story or fairy tale. Kind of a legend. Mom in prison in Texas. Kind of a myth. Mom. Prison. Texas.
Finally, I went to see her. Had my birth certificate and everything. They couldn't keep me out. Guard takes me through to a room, says, wait a while, son. Comes back in 20 minutes, and he says, your mom's inside. And, yeah, that's what brings me here today. To see the famous, unremembered person face to face. Nothing happened. I didn't feel a thing. Got no relief. She's a flumpy Mexican gal in a white uniform. Looks like she cleans rooms. Gray hair with a couple black streaks. Medicated to keep her mind off suicide. It worked too well. She was deeply content. A freight train bearing down on her wouldn't get a response. Being around her relaxed me. Like resting in the shade by a wide, flat pond. She thought Dad was dead. What? No, Dad's not dead.
He's not?
No, Mom, he isn't dead. He's just upstairs. Mostly crying and watching television. She says,
yeah, he never was much good around the house. Which wouldn't have been so bad. I guess, except he never went anywhere else. Just hung around making up poems and never writing them down. Oh, yeah. What's California like?
Mysterious, Mom. It's all filled with shiny mist and foggy sunshine.
Ah, God, that sounds nice. Oh, well, but I will never get there. They say heaven's a lot like California. Hmm? Oh, yeah, what's the problem with you boys?
Problem? Maybe you notice I'm a walking, talking piece of shit. She leaned close and looked at my face. And you could see her mind wiggling right through her eyeballs. And then she had this flash of clear light. Said,
sorry, he doesn't get it. I realize that.
I said, that's what I come for. I said, lady, that right there is what I come for.
Old bro came back to Ukiah last summer sometime. Brother Luke himself with his ass showing through the pockets of his jeans and still putting everybody else down. I wouldn't have recognized him on the street. I'd need a flashlight and a map to find Luke's eyes and that poor, sick, mean, sad face. Came back to make trouble for his old girlfriend. Do you ever know her? Susie? Bro says, poking around in her stool for my broken heart. Lives in mud and gonna bring the whole world down to taste it. He wants the world to realize how, for some, this life comes hard. It's all uphill. They just get tired. They just get so weary. They just want the cops to carry them away to that sweet land called jail and tuck them into their trundle beds. What I wish is that he could come to a place like this and hear a couple people tell the truth. You hear the truth, and you remember it was always there. It's inspiring, Brother John.
It's fantastic how men and women come out from under these lifelong lies. Roll them off their backs and say, whew, whoosh, long time carrying that, mother. And the things they tell, the shit they've done, the blood they've swum through, the fool moves, the lucky chances, the wins and losses, all the burnt down houses, all the children wailing in the storms, the lucky hit at the last minute, or turning their backs on the hearts they broke over and over, or getting busted on their birthday, or thinking they're dead, then waking up with the sun all warm on their face and hitching home cross-country in the rain just in time to say that one important thing before their father takes his dying breath, or getting there too late and saying it to his grave instead. This one speaker, Howard, had us all frozen up. We listened to him stock still for 45 minutes. He started out simple, comes out of high school, tries the infantry, finds the service kind of boring without a war, drinking on leave and weekends, gets his discharge, goes to Santa Rosa Community College, going for a business degree, drinking on weekends, itchy and discontented. One night, he has this friend who's a cop in SR. This guy says, ride along with us and get a taste. He says,
2 hours into the ride, I'm feeling like I never felt. These guys tell a citizen what to do. He better do it. They give orders and they are obeyed. And I never knew how bad I wanted that. Zip into the Santa Rosa Police Training Program, and then I'm a cop. I got 3 girlfriends, 1 black, 1 Asian, 1 white. I'm cruising in a squad car all night long, kicking ass, busting heads, top of the world, man. 1 year in, I've got a sweet little wife and a 6-week baby daughter. 2 years, they put me on narcotics and vice. Undercover. My job is to hang out in bars and party like Nero. Can I do that? Hell. What do they think that I've been doing every free minute? Anyhow. And will I buy drugs? Gee, okay, I'll give it a shot. And Howard, they say, listen, sometimes in the course of your duties, you're going to have to do a line of coke laid out before you. And in the course of your duties, you're just going to have to put your head down there and suck it up. It's part of the ride, okay, Howard? Yeah, I say, part of the ride, yeah. And inside of 6 months, I'm the biggest cokehead, the biggest dealer, the crookedest cop in Northern California. I did armed robberies on dealers and drugstores up and down Highway 101. I had 7 girlfriends, and I was pimping every one. My sweet little wife divorced me, took my daughter, and never even noticed. The force gave me $1,000 a month to buy coke in little bags and turn them in, and I had $30,000 under my bed in a shoebox next to 3 or 4 kilos a week of coke the force would never see. I'd wake up in the afternoon and fare forth and wreak havoc. Hey, I murdered 3 guys that I still claim the world is better off without. But I am not the judge, am I? But I sure thought I was. I took the lives of other human beings. I thought I was God. I looked in the mirror and said so. I looked in the mirror and said, you are God. And when God decided to prove me wrong, he came down like a mountain of dog shit on my head. They rolled me up and they socked me with so many charges, including at one point second degree murder. that if they stacked them up and ran me through, I'd be doing time 100 years past my natural death. I'm lying in jail, and that cell is sucking the drugs and the fight and the soul right out of me and giving it to God, and God is squeezing it in his fingers, man. Every last fiber of my soul is in the almighty grip of the truth. And the truth is that everything I've done, every thought I've thought, every moment I've lived is shit, turned to dust, dust blown away. And God has said, fuck it. I'm not even going to pray. You squeeze my guts. You squeeze my guts till you get tired. That's all I want now. Because at least it's real. It's true. It's got something to do with you. So then I think I died. I think I died in jail. My life inside just left me. And who you see before you now? Someone else. So I wandered like a ghost through the court system, and I came out with a sentence of 10 years. I did 7 one day at a time. Prayed every day and every night. But only one prayer. Squeeze. Squeeze till you get tired, Lord. Kill me, Lord. I don't care. I don't care as long as it's you who kills me. Just got out 8 days ago. And rehab is part of my parole. And nothing to show for 36 years on this earth. Except that God is closer to me now than my next breath. And that's all I'll ever need, and that's all I'll ever want. And if you think I'm bullshitting, you can kiss my ass. My story is the amazing truth.
And me too. Me too, Brother John. My life is the amazing truth. Like Dad says,
I put down 1 foot on the road of regret and set out on my journey.
Just to sketch out the last 4 years. Broke, lost, detox. Homeless in Texas, shot in the ribs by a 38, mooching off the charity of Dad in Ukiah. Detox again. Run over, I think. I'm pretty sure. I can't remember. Shot again. Detox right now, one more time again. Might have been one or two more detox trips and humiliating vacations at Dad's in there. Shot twice by the same guy. First, he just grazed me when I was stealing his money and coke. Second time, he looked me up and got me in the shoulder with a .22 Derringer. And those .22 rifles hurt. I pity the folks who get the experience of the bigger calibers. Guarantee you a .44 would take the arm right off a wiry sort of guy like me. More than once woke up with some medical professional saying, you should be dead. That's what it's going to say on my gravestone. I should be dead. Your brother in Christ, Cass.
Ladies and gentlemen, the man of the hour, Dennis Johnson.
Come back, Outcast. Come on out. Jeff Perry. David Call. Mr. John Hurd. Christine Aviat. Angie Payton as Grandma. Jason Ritter as Cash. Brenda Strong. Jan Monroe. Brian Maffei. What a cast. Jesus. So we just we have time for more questions because they kept up a good pace. But I'm going to start, and then we'll open it up to all of you. I got two questions for you. The first one is, I've never known, how did this piece come out? The one thing to write plays as a trilogy, but this thing seems like an addendum. How did that happen? I was afraid of that.
I don't recall. I don't remember when this was written exactly.
Well, it had to be after the plays.
Yeah, it was after the plays.
And Cass just, it demanded more time in your brain?
Actually, I think it was the rehab thing. When I was younger, in my late 20s, I was in some detoxes and rehabs and so on. And I remember being impressed with the experience pretty much as Cass is in this piece and thinking, I'd like to write about this, but I don't think anybody could ever really write about this. I would still like to do, I wish that I could do some sort of play that is, I wish I could write a multiple character piece that's just a group therapy. But it's, it's been attempted a lot, and I don't know if it ever really happens, if it comes off, the way the experience does. But it was just something that impressed me and I wanted to write about. But I wish I could be a little more clear.
That's fine.
Oh, good.
We'll take
okay.
what we get.
Yeah,
right. Well, yes. What was it like to hear it?
I'm flabbergasted.
Excellent. That's what I was aiming for.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, okay. Then I wonder if you knew while you were writing it how funny it was.
I think Cass is funny. I mean, I think the way he expresses himself is funny.
Yes.
He's a Huckleberry Finn kind of a speaker.
Wouldn't have thought of that, but okay. Yeah. And then there's one moment in it that really haunts me, one line in it, about the happy sodomizer in the Gary Cooper cowboy. That we have
sodomizers
to have,
are happy.
No, I get the guy. What I wonder is, that you say then, what you have to do is come down to one story. You think that's really possible?
I don't know. I was convinced by it, hearing him say that.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't remember writing that particularly, but I was very convinced. I thought.
Yeah, no, Jason was very convinced.
I wanted to do that.
Yeah. Well, that's all I got. Let's have some questions from out there.
Just raise your hand.
Yeah, we got mics for you. There's a man right there standing up. Maybe he's leaving though. Running out. Anybody, weigh in. Let's hear some inquiries from the audience. I'd like to ask you some questions, actually, just in terms of how it came across and
buttonhole people as they are leaving.
As they're leaving, yeah.
Let's ask Jason what it's like.
Yeah, Jason. Wait, yeah. Let's put the burden on him, Jason.
Pass it down. It was a lot of fun. I mean, I felt very lucky. It's not every play where every word, whether it's being read by someone else, is coming from Cass himself. So everybody's line, even when he's telling a story of something that happened to him at group or even repeating verbatim what someone else said, it's all information about what he's going through. And so I had all of this stuff here. And then it was really amazing because I was able to go back and read these other plays that had all of these characters in them. And so it was just such a full, rich world that I felt lucky enough to step into. And he's got a very specific voice, and so it's really fun. He's a fun. I mean, he's going through some really heavy and intense stuff. And Daryl helped me sort of figure out where he is at any given point. But I had a great time.
You sure felt like a family.
It did feel like a family. Yes, go.
We have one question.
Go.
Question.
Hi. Hi, Cindy.
Hi, Daryl. I have a question about what you just said about not remembering having read it, having written it. And I wonder if that happens to you frequently, that you write things and don't remember. Because as Jason said, it's such a full world, it's hard to imagine having written it and not remembering that.
I must have written it really quickly. That's what, you know, it must have just come out fast. I know my wife, Cindy, might be able to help me. Do you remember when it was?
The first time you showed it to me was 2005 when we were...
It was published in 2006.
Well, yeah, I think it was probably written fairly swiftly, and which can sometimes happen with a first-person piece. And so for that reason, you know, if I work on something over and over and over, sometimes things take years, and there are many, many drafts and incarnations, and then that, you know, all that becomes memorable. But if it's quick, well, gee, that's the way I like it. I like to find it later. You know, it's like, oh, I don't remember this. You know, and change a couple of words and, you know, send it off.
Yeah. Next question right over here.
Just wondered if you had some general thoughts on the differences between short stories, novel, and plays, and in your process, and if you favor one over another, or if you've favored them at different times, and whether or not you have any particular playwrights that you like.
Well, well, the first part of your question, I like writing plays the best because I'm just dealing with the voices, and I don't have to really, you don't even have to put any stage directions down. People love to figure that stuff out on their own anyway, and they ignore half of what, you know, my
never.
Stage directions.
I never ignored anything.
Yeah. You know, and I'm really wrong about stage directions too. I mean, I just have people leaving and they, you know, then the actors point out he never came in, you know. So, like so but you know, I just hear the voices and write them down, and it's easy and fun. Whereas with prose fiction, I have to imagine the scene, and you know, it gets hard. It's more worky, you know, more effortful. As for the playwrights. It's not so much playwrights, but there are certain experiences I've had when I went to plays where I was imprinted. I saw a production of Beth Henley's Crimes of the Heart in the early 80s at a church in Wellfleet, Massachusetts, and it really hit me, and I wanted to write plays after I saw that. And a couple of years later, I saw in Wellfleet again, the Wellfleet Harbor Players did a David Mamet, the American Buffalo, and that really got to me. Then there were another experience was seeing the video of Steppenwolf's True West, the Sam Shepard play, and those three in particular just really fixed themselves. And so I just go around imitating those three plays, you know. I'm trying to figure out some way of plagiarizing them without getting caught. Yeah, you know, that's basically, yeah.
Question over
here. Dennis, I'm wondering if you could say anything about your rituals or routines. I'm here.
Oh, there you go.
Just your daily habits, how you write, where you write, any of the details about your work.
It kind of changes because my address changes a lot. We rotate among different addresses. We become migratory. But the discipline I employ is just if I have something that I'm working on that I want to finish, then I must work 5 minutes a day. That's the
That's the rule. And, you know, and that's, you know, that's so much better than 2 hours a day or something like that. If it's 2 hours, I'm not even going to start. So that, but if it's 5 minutes, then I will do it. You know, and some, and then some. Eventually, something catches fire, and I actually work on it longer than that.
So, so all you have to do is sit down for 5 minutes.
Yeah. That's
good. This is a question for everybody, because on the written page, I would think I wouldn't hear your voices, and I was wondering, was this something as a director that you figured out, or
yes,
how it came about?
About 2007, I think. He sent it to me, and I read it. I love it. He said, you'll like this. And I had worked on Shoppers. I'd worked on, you know, his stuff, and he knew how much I loved it. And so he sent it to me, and I went, If this was, if the dresser and the dressee were to read it out, it's a play. It's a drama. It's odd. It's not like anything else you've seen, but it is a play, and it has an arc, and it's redemptive. It will help people. Which is, I know what he wrote it anyway, even if he doesn't. But yeah, I just sort of, and he looked at it and went, yeah, I mean, I assume you said yeah. but I mean, you did. He supported it. He supported it moving forward. You say what?
I don't remember any of that.
Yeah, good. That's the way I like it. But that's how it went. And then for the actors, and they could speak to this. It was weird. It was hard to figure out who's speaking now, especially Satan. Others were like, why do I say dear Satan, John kept saying. And I didn't know. I just thought it was the right thing to do for Cass to get him to where he needed to get.
One question.
Thank you, man.
Yes, over here on your right.
Yes, go.
I have a question for John Hurd. I was wondering if I heard some George Bush and his Satan, and
yeah, I drifted into something weird there. It was ahead of me. Could have been George. He's ahead of all of us.
Just to be clear, it was after hearing his laugh that I said, oh, throw a laugh in there and in there. I wanted to hear it more.
Can I ask one?
Please.
You, a lot of times in the theater when words are written so poetically, I mean, it just seems like everything comes out is beautiful, you know, talking about, you know, needing a map to find someone's eyes and talking about, clouds that are shiny. When you go to a play and the words are so beautiful, it actually kind of gets to be a little leaden, because people somehow are, I don't know, caught in the words, and it stops sounding like talking. And I just wonder if any of the actors, it just flowed so easily, as if every you know, people do not speak that poetically, and yet it sounded like these people just, or this person naturally spoke this poetically, and it was just how he spoke. I don't know if anyone's had that experience on stage where the words were beautiful, but as a play, it just kind of makes you, it just weighs you down. I mean, was anyone even conscious of how beautiful the words that you're speaking? I mean, clearly you're conscious.
I could say. I mean, I think that is the danger when your character speaks beautifully and poetically, is you have to remember that that's the way he talks, and that's the way he sees the world and things like that, as opposed to the pitfall and the danger being a guy who's in love with the way he talks, the way he says his words. He's not in love with it. That's just how he sees it. He's trying to describe it. That's how he describes it. But if he starts going, listen to this sentence as it comes out of my mouth, he's we don't do that as we speak. Some people do, and they're and a lot of plays do, yeah. And when people do that, they're bores. You know, they're so interested in the sound of their own voice that it gets, you know, you go, oh, do I have to be here? Or you can just do this by yourself. I don't. So I think that's the thing, is that, you know, with Cass, this is the way he sees the world, and these are the things that he's trying to communicate to another person. Otherwise, it's just him. I mean, it is actually just him. Some of these letters are in his head that he never sends, but they all are to other people in his brain. It's never just to hear himself out loud. So I think that's the key is, yeah, it can be tough because you read something, you go, God, that's so beautiful. I really want to slow it down and make sure the audience hears how cool it is when I say that. But a lot of things you just got to say, they'll hear the words in that order. You can just throw it away and just go, oh, he just tossed that little beautiful thing out. Like, but that's what people do all the time. They just, that's how they see something. And anyway.
I don't do that ever.
Neither do I.
No, listen, I know I'm stating the obvious, but it seems like, you know, Dennis gave himself a beautiful range of utterance organically. Once you choose one interesting person who's in a crucible of just about going crazy and has the function of trying to write to dozens of people who are crucial in his life, and who is trapped like a little animal in a cage with all his thoughts, you know, you've got a Huckleberry Finn meets Catcher in the Rye meets Crazy Man range of utterance, you know?
I also think that there's a particular American musicality to Dennis's language that not a lot of other writers in theater attempt, and not a lot of American writers. I think to our ears, we're used to hearing like Shakespeare, like, you know, whatever. And I think he just really captures a very contemporary sort of rhythm and beauty that is very a uniquely American voice that I think we're all sort of attuned to hearing.
I was just going to say that these plays, the first two parts of this trilogy have been published. You can all go out and get it, probably here in the library. Shoppers, published by Viking. Shoppers and other plays, right? Yeah, yeah. I just want to keep this going. You started out as a poet, is that correct?
Correct.
Correct. And his poetry is incredible, too. So go out there and buy Dennis's books. Cedar Ring Fox, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you. I'm the artistic director of Ward Theater. And this is what we do. We get great writers and great actors into the same room and bring stories to life. If you like what you heard tonight, please like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and be sure to sign up on our email list. Hopefully, as we were talking with the library staff earlier, this might be the beginning of a long and beautiful friendship with Aloud. But we have got Ellen Gerganis coming in this fall and Elizabeth Strout. And would love to have you at more Word Theater experiences. Thank you. These are all regular actors with us. And Daryl Larson, who adapted and directed tonight's performance.
Get to your cars now.
Aloud is made possible through support provided by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the National Endowment for the Arts, and Errant Fox. Additional support provided by the Los Angeles Public Library, the Stay Home and Read a Book Ball, and individual Library Foundation members. Media support is provided by LA Weekly, KCRW 89.9 FM, and KUSC 91.5 FM.